Spider pig, spider pig, does whatever a spider pig does. Can he swing from a web? No, he can't. He's a pig. Look out, he is a spider pig.
They can be a great people, Kal-El. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat. Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 71 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that has always been forever evil. I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
David Longo.
In this issue, more creators leave DC, with the publisher becoming the star of its own Villains Month. Mark Waid buys a comic book store, and Vin Diesel saves the Marvel Universe again. Then Spider-Man, Amazing Wedding Planner, all this, plus our kick-ass pick of the week, Saga, by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples. All after this very important election weekend message. This is Behind the Panels.
If you think superheroes like me can fight all your battles for you, think again. Voting for your local, state, and federal representative lets you choose who's on your side in all the issues we face today. From the little ones to the really big ones, too. But before you can vote, you need to register. So do it now. For registration forms or information on how to register, visit your local participating video store. Have a voice in your future. Register and vote. And Tom Spider-Man sent you.
Was it my imagination or Spider-Man saying very camp? Tell Spider-Man sent you.
He was giving a very important message of how to vote, to register to vote, David, which in Australia is a very important thing at the moment, because apparently 25% of young Australians did not do so.
Very sad statistic. Yes, look, we're not
going to... Because they were too busy listening to this podcast.
We're not going to get into politics in this show, because this show... Well, not real politics. We'll get into...
Comic book politics.
But I think we do need to make...
DC, we're talking to you.
I think we do need to make mention very quickly before we continue on, our congrats to Nicola Scott. For owning the internet today. Yeah. For owning the internet today.
I may not mention what she actually said.
We'll play this in honor of her.
Yes.
Hi, everybody. This is Nicola Scott, and you're listening to Behind the Panel.
Yes, you are.
Because it was said on a personal Facebook page. I don't feel comfortable about sharing that.
No.
But she made one of the best post-election comments I have read. And we salute you, Nicola.
So if you follow Nicola Scott on Facebook, go read that, because it's well worth having a look at. But today we declare her the winner of the internet.
Yes. So. fellas, it's been a massive, massive comics week, so we weren't going to waste too much time getting into what we've been reading this week. But before we do that, of course, as always, I'm going to hit up the Wayback Machine to take us back to our Vintage Clip of the Week. This time, I've programmed the Wayback Machine to seek out Forbidden Love.
Ooh.
So here we go.
You know, I got a feeling my life's really gonna change since you fell into a ducky.
Yeah, well, I'm glad somebody's happy.
If I could just get my career back on course, I'd only have the old standard worry left.
What's that?
Just can't seem to find the right man.
Maybe it's not a man you should be looking for.
You think I might find happiness in the animal kingdom, Ducky?
Like they say, Dal. Love's strange. We could always give it a try.
Okay. Let's go for it, Mr. Macho.
What do you mean? Okay. It was a joke! Listen, I'm pretty tired.
It's just that you're so incredibly soft and cuddly.
Bev, let's be realistic. I mean, my apartment's zillions of miles from here. You're 3 feet taller than I am.
I just can't resist your intense animal magnetism.
Whoops. Anyway, where will it all lead? Marriage? Kids? A house in the suburbs?
Let's just face it. It's fate.
No, it's not. I've got a headache.
And I got the aspirin.
Be gentle.
Yeah.
one of the most awkward scenes in cinema history.
That and saxophone can be only from one film.
Oh, yeah. Well, all I'm going to say to that is...
Release the small waterfowl.
I think the small waterfowl was released somewhere in the middle of that, that clip. That was, of course, people, Howard the Duck. That one's for you, David McPherson.
Can I throw out a quick observation there? George Lucas produced Howard the Duck because he said he absolutely loved the material. He loved Howard the Duck. It was like one of his lifelong things to bring this movie to the screen. All I can say is, how does he treat the stuff that he hates?
Yeah. He keeps releasing them as special editions.
Hey, where's the Howard the Duck one?
Well played, sir. Well played.
All right, people, I'm going to get into this because it's been, as I said, a massive, massive, massive week for comics. Probably one of the biggest release weeks of the year. So let's introduce a section I like to call What We've Been Reading, mainly because that's what it's called.
Where? Looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
All right. If I can kick this one off, I read a hell of a lot this week. I think there was something close to 20 titles that came out this week.
Most of them were part of Forever.
actually, it's funny. And that was just the Batman titles.
In 3D.
You'll
have to forgive me. I am fighting a cold that's come on all of
Wait,
a sudden.
Before we ask what we've been reading, can we ask what we thought of the covers themselves?
Okay, look. I actually heard that there were reports in the UK, because they're having a bit of a heat wave at the moment, that they were melting. Look, the actual 3D lenticular covers, I said that because I like saying the word lenticular.
That's a good word.
Up. Lenticular.
Lenticular.
Lenticular. They look okay. Some of them work better than others. The Joker one looks really cool because it's got all the ha ha ha's in the background and the teeth and everything. It's a cool effect. It is a total gimmick, but then what has happened in the new 52 that hasn't been a total gimmick?
It reminds me of like the Nintendo 3DS. Do you remember that? It's 3D without the glasses. Yeah. If you hold it in the right
angle.
Way.
And very still.
Darkseid's one looked pretty good.
The Darkseid one looks good. Yeah, look, I mean, there was a good one. I tell you what, there was, but the problem I'm finding with this is they are releasing 52 titles this month. It's just that some of them are the same title four times. So there's four Batman, there's four Dark Knight.
No, because they're actually called Bane or Two-Face.
Yeah,
or...
because at some
Lobo.
Stage...
Lobo.
Lobo. At some stage between last week, it's a different design in Lobo in these covers than it is in the other ones.
I know,
as well.
It's ridiculous.
Some stage between last week's Justice League 23 and this week's Forever Evil, the Justice League died, apparently.
Apparently, this has happened sometime between the lines, or between the panels.
Between the panels.
Or behind the panels, even. Somewhere along the line, they had a big fight that we didn't get to see. So maybe we'll see it in a flashback at some point.
Just a quick rundown of what I read this week, just because there's most of the big ones that came out. Forever Evil, number one. Batman, Green Arrow, Green Lantern, Justice League, and Justice League Dark, 23.1.
All 23.1.
JLA, 7.1. The Star Wars, which was interesting.
So you
we'll
didn't
talk
read
about that.
Earth 2. 7.1,
no.
Which actually had nothing. No, it wasn't 17. It was like 15.1 to 0.1 or whatever it was. But Earth 2, I loved, my favorite one of them all, because it actually had nothing to do with Earth 2 at all. It was Earth 2 Desaad. But Desaad was on Earth 1, and on the front cover had Power Girl and Huntress, who were not in the book. So
that is so DC. That's crazy DC.
All those wacky DC guys.
Things that weren't DC that came out this week, which were quite good. There was the Star Wars, the Lucas draft, which has been.
I read that too.
Depending on which site you're looking at, it's either called The Star Wars or The Star Wars Lucas draft, because I think Dark Horse last minute renamed it just to clarify that it was what it was. Also, Marvel hit us with not one, but two major events this week. The second chapter of Infinity and X-Men Battle of the Atom, which had the tie-in issue, All New X-Men number 16, which is basically part two.
It was part two. Yeah. On the cover, it's got chapter two.
Chapter two, and which is interesting that they've released them in the same way. They're really barreling through this one quickly.
That's because nobody's interested.
And also Avengers AI number 3, which people should be interested in, and Trillium number 2. I'll just say out of those, because I'm not going to talk about them again, but if you aren't checking out Avengers AI, go and give it a go, because it's really funny, it's a lot of fun, it's probably one of the most fun books on the market at the moment, which is saying a lot because they're all getting so dark and serious and angry. And Trillium interesting second chapter.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a fantastic second chapter. May not be what people were expecting after the first chapter. But let's get to the big business of the week. Let's start with Forever Evil.
Do we have to?
No.
Okay, let's skip over Forever Evil.
Expecting a theme.
Forever Evil. That's our theme song. I think every week we should come in with, we'll talk about Forever Evil, okay. And you'll hear...
Forever Evil.
Almost as good as Age of Ultron.
The Battle of the Atom.
That's they're our two themes, people. If anyone wants to make us a theme.
And then the Infinite tie-in.
Infinite tie-in, yeah. Which was,
we're going to have seven new themes.
Themes each month, it seems. Look, Forever Evil, of course, is basically the second half of the Justice League book that came out last week. It is apparently the Justice League are dead. The villains have taken over everywhere. What I thought was really interesting was that most of the story is told from the perspective of Lex Luthor, who's kind of being painted as an anti-hero in this, which I thought was quite... Actually, I found that quite interesting.
I actually didn't mind Forever... I've been bagging out, but I didn't mind Forever Evil, the book.
No.
I hated the tie-ins.
Yeah, the tie-ins are the gimmick.
Well, the tie-ins are pointless, which is why I hated them, because they're all basically... zero-year stories for the supervillains. Exactly, and they have no bearing or relevance to anything that's going on.
I really, even though it had nothing to do with anything, I really like the Batman one, just because it's...
as a Joker,
because it's Joker running around with an ape that he calls...
needs more apes. Yeah.
What's the name of it? Jack and Apes, yeah. And he's just running around. It's completely crazy. And I actually think that... I think it's Kubert wrote this one. I think he's actually just...
Yes, it is Kubert, yes.
Yeah, I think it's actually... He's just completely taking the piss with this one. And that's what I liked about it. He's gone, you know what? If I'm going to have to do this, I'm going to make a story about Joker and a monkey. I don't care.
Look, out of the tie-in books, I read several of them. There was only two that stood out for me. One was The Joker, just purely because it's always fun to see Joker again, even though it's irrelevant to anything. And you know, Joker... Joker playing airplanes with a baby spoon with a monkey has got to be seen to be believed. But the other one that I didn't mind as well, and it's funny because I actually hate the character, but in... is it Superman? I'm trying to remember which book. No, it's Action Comics. Sorry, it's Action Comics is Cyborg Superman, which
I
can't stand Cyborg Superman. I think it's a really stupid idea. Now, I don't know much about pre-52 Cyborg Superman except for the tie-ins that fell into Green Lantern. Remember, he had those tie-ins to the Green Lantern story.
Is it the same in The Death of Superman?
That's what I wanted to ask you guys. What is the origin of Cyborg Superman? Do we know what he was before he was Cyborg Superman?
You know, it's got to be 20 years since I read those.
In the New 52, spoilers, people, but you know, we talk about comics with spoilers and all. In the New 52, they're basically saying it's Supergirl's father. So it is actually...
That doesn't sound familiar at all.
All right, so
I only read it last year and in the omnibus, and I don't know.
Supergirl book, that was the big reveal at the end, was he got himself reverted back to his pre-cyborg form, and it's her father, right? And this issue, cyborg Superman issue for Forever Evil, is his origin. How he became Cyborg Superman.
That's right. Sorry, the original, it's coming back to me now. Yeah, it was kind of actually a bit of a tribute to the Fantastic Four or pastiche of the Fantastic Four origin. He was an astronaut in space and solar flare, LexCorp stuff. That's kind of his origin story, how he became the cyborg.
So they've rewritten
thing.
That completely.
And then when Superman died, he decided to pose as Superman.
Okay,
and that's where it came in. Yeah.
So in New 52, he's actually a Brainiac creation. He was found on the bottled city of Argo, and basically he was picked out by Brainiac, who turned him into the perfect specimen and was set loose on the world to find more creatures who could become perfection. So that's basically the concept. And this book is all about that. And so I kind of read that and went, all right, there's a little bit more depth there. And I actually didn't mind this. So I quite liked that book.
The ones that I thought were worth reading, actually, I'm showing my bias, of course, but the Green Arrow one was really good, mainly because it's the same creative team. It's Lemire and Sorrentino.
Well, and that's rare in this because they're all different.
Different teams. Yeah. And a lot of them are different teams. But it actually feels like... Because it's Count Vertigo's origin story. And even though the origin story itself is pretty straightforward, it feels like it's just giving them a chance to go back and flesh out a character they've just introduced. So they worked it to their advantage.
Right.
But the Green Lantern one, I think, is definitely worth reading because it's the origin of a character called Relic, who is basically going to be the big bad in the upcoming Lights Out crossover.
Mm. Oh, okay.
So it is, they've actually used this month as an opportunity to introduce the character that will be.
And this is, I understand.
Basically, the good creators are using this to their advantage. The other ones are all just going, well, we've got to do something.
Well,
with
most of the creators, most of
monkey.
The creators are taking a day off while somebody else comes in and fills in for them, which is what's basically happened with the Cyborg Superman story, what happened with the Joker, and so forth. There's like the B teams are coming in and writing stuff,
and sometimes B villains, because they've got to do 52 villain books. They've got to think of everyone. Have we got 52 villains? You know,
Killer Freeze.
Is Captain Cold in there somewhere?
That's right, yeah. Yeah. But as far as the Forever Evil book is concerned. I actually really like the story structure.
I loved it. Remember that one page where Superman of Earth-3, Ultraman or whatever he's called, where he grabs the kryptonite?
I love it.
I was just like standing up.
Yeah, it's like that.
Thank you, DC.
It's actually funny. Someone pointed out that kryptonite is actually his weakness as much as it is Superman's, because he's addicted to it in the same way that Superman's allergic to it.
I like the fact that he's addicted to kryptonite and he has to block the sun.
That's got to be the coolest scene in the comics. The fact that he flies up and shifts the moon to block the sun.
And you've got Lex Luthor who actually utters the words, "This is a job for
Superman." Drops to his knees and he's like, "Yeah, I love it. That's why I really like the fact that they've made Lex comes to the realization the world does need a Superman. You know?
Did anybody think in that opening, because when it first started, I'm actually thinking, is this a flashback? Did anybody think that he was talking to Thomas Wayne? Because he kept referring to Thomas.
He's talking to Cord. So it's almost Ted Cord being introduced.
Yeah, but it's like he's referring to him as Thomas, and I'm going, are we in a flashback here? Is he trying to buy Wayne Enterprises? What the hell's going on here? You know,
no. It's interesting that they did that. They've almost introduced Ted Cord, so maybe Ted Cord will make an appearance as Blue Beetle, the original Blue Beetle. I'm fascinated by this because I think the actual story itself, Johns is doing a good story with that Trinity War, Forever Evil storyline. Unfortunately, it's as we said before, it's the new 52 isn't going where we. It's like they've forgotten about Pandora and the whole thing now. It's like because literally, she's not.
She's a bit player. She's been reverted to a bit player.
When you think about the fact that, that we played Where's Wally with her in the or Where's Waldo for the Americans in the first. All the number one issues. Yeah. And so it was clearly she was important. And now it's kind of like, no, she wasn't important at all. It was all about Earth-3.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, I've just invested 2 years
and
in
you. And I liked Pandora.
If you remember going back to way back early on in this show, we actually talked. There was a end of book discussion panel. What did they used to call DC Nation or whatever it was, where they actually talked about the big board that they had at DC, which actually outlined the next couple of years and blah.
Don't let them see the big board.
Don't let them see the big board and all this sort of stuff. And I think that's. I think somewhere in the last 12 months they've taken down the big board and thrown it into the bin and said, forget all that. We're going to try something else.
But it's going to come up in our stories, which we'll move on to the news in a minute because. DC this week, it's all about changing editorial direction at the last minute.
Yeah.
And it seems to be something that they've done. And I wouldn't be surprised if they've gotten to this event and gone, you know what? Let's just get rid of this character and just do something else because, you know, it'll sell books.
Jim Lee obviously got bored.
Yeah. I want to draw something different this time, you know. So without any further ado...
Just quickly before we move on.
Oh, we're going to do Battle of the Atom. Yeah. So.
Oh, Battle of the Atom.
And can we also discuss the Star Wars very quickly
Okay. First of all, Battle of the Atom.
I haven't read Battle of the Atom. You two, go.
I just want to say quickly, though, that I finished reading Black Sad up to date.
Oh,
last week's pick of the week.
Yes, all four volumes.
It only gets better.
It certainly does. Yeah. The artwork. There's the fifth volume is being... If you like the Black Sad Facebook page... They're starting to release some teaser pages from Black Sad Volume 5, which is called Amarillo or something like that. Something like that. So it looks good.
He's in a yellow car.
Yeah, big yellow caddy driving across the state. So really, really looking forward to that.
Battle of the Atom.
Cannot wait. Yeah, Battle of the Atom is the X-Men crossover. And it's bloody Brian Michael Bendis.
Bloody hell.
Doing this whole Age of Ultron series going, time travel, if you keep doing time travel, it'll stuff up the space-time, you can't do it. So what are the first thing the X-Men do when they're in trouble? They bloody travel through time again to try and stop themselves from stopping themselves again. So I don't know.
I got an idea. Let's go back to earlier and bring back earlier X-Men to talk to the early X-Men to stop the later X-Men doing what the later X-Men are doing.
You just described Battle of the Atom.
Oh, it's, cool.
Yeah, pretty much. You've got three generations of X-Men running through. You got the original X-Men, the current X-Men, and the future X-Men.
And now what they need to do is go time traveling back to pull the 80s X-Men out. Ooh. And we'll put them in there as well. And if we do it just in time, we might be able to get, what's his name? Something Chief. What's his name?
Joe Quesada or something?
No. What was his name? The Indian superhero in the 80s X-Men who died
Apache
the first...
Chief, yeah.
Apache Chief.
No way.
In the first... Remember when we did the...
That's DC, isn't it? Yeah.
When we did the Claremont... Remember we did the Claremont run?
Yeah, I forgot his name.
And the Indian X-Men who literally died in the first issue.
Sure.
Do you know who they did bring into this
Thunder,
though?
Thunder something.
Do you know who does come from the future? Xavier's grandson.
Oh, of course
who
he does.
Also has psychic abilities.
And, of course he does.
Looks he's bald, exactly, right? He's bald and he looks exactly like
him. Is he in a wheelchair?
Not yet. Yeah.
He'll
go back to the past with the other...
You guys are
right in that he's bringing the original...
No, but that's how they could bring Xavier back. It's the Xavier from... Well, I'm getting confused.
You guys are not selling me on this book at all.
It's actually pretty entertaining.
It's classic Bendis first issue. It's really good. Expect it to divert off into a story that has nothing to do with it in the next couple of issues.
Should we put bets down on all the events? So Battle of the Atom's going to start good, go to hell.
Yeah.
Infinity going to start okay, get better.
And then get better and confuse us to hell.
Yeah. And then Forever Evil on that token is...
Infinity's going to get better.
Yeah.
Quickly, before we move on, the Star Wars, which is the original Dark Horse version of Lucas's original draft.
However, what's interesting is it actually does say in the opening of the book, it is actually adapted by, so it's actually got a written by credit, not even an adapted by credit. It's got a written by
J.W. Rinzer, I think is the name of the guy who's done a lot of Star Wars books.
So it would be interesting to see how different he's strayed away from that original
The
draft.
Artist is Mike Mayhew, a New Zealand artist, and he's been very much influenced by the Ralph Macquarie art. Thank you, good save.
But that's actually really, I like that. I like the fact that a lot of the costume design.
He's influenced by very much made his own world. I want to say that it's an incredible design. Really, really like the look of it. Interesting version of Star Wars, because it's the first new Star Wars in a way that's completely different, not indebted to canon in any way, because it's back when Luke Skywalker was an old general.
Although it's originally based on a George Lucas property, though, because at one point the little kid goes, yippee!
Yippee! I know, I mentioned that in the review. It's absolutely right. There's a yippee in there, and the opening is about as interesting as the whole all the tax stuff in Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
So you can see
that you could tell also that it came from the 70s because they kill off a kid in the first opening
scene. That's true.
So it's like that's a very 70s thing to do. You would never kill off the kid this early in anything else.
We better go on with the news because we have got a pretty big story to talk about today. So I'm going to hit up the news theme.
Marvel has said that it wants a female-led superhero film in the future. Kate Sackhoff is heavily rumored to be up for the role of Captain Marvel.
Meanwhile, Vin Diesel has set the net ablaze with speculation by saying that his 2016 Marvel role will lead to a merging of brands.
Our pick of the week, Saga, has won the... the Hugo Award for Best Graphic Story at the 2013 Hugo Awards. Joss Whedon's The Avengers also picked up an award.
Spartacus.
How many times can I say award in one sentence?
Award-winning Spartacus actor Cynthia Adair Robinson has been cast as Amanda Waller in the second season of Arrow. I guess that answers which version of Amanda
Waller.
And
all I have to say is, the legendary Marv Wolfman will take over Superboy in December, while Tony Bedard will tackle Supergirl, guest starring the new look Lobo.
Mark Wade has bought a comic shop. In a statement on his website, he said, "Effective immediately, you can trust me when I say I want comics retailers to thrive, because now I am one."
Fair enough. A Cleveland man has done whatever a father can by selling his copy of The Amazing Spider-Man number 1 for $7,900 to pay for his daughter's wedding. He paid 12 cents for it in 1963.
Now the big story of the week, J.H. Williams III and William Hayden have walked away from Batwoman, citing editorial decisions. Mark and Draco will be the new writer, but the story behind this is really, really interesting. Now the big...
Talk about controversy.
Controversy. Look, media have picked this up and basically said, DC bans gay wedding, and it's a little bit more complex than that. We've seen over the last 24 months a lot of creators walk from DC Comics, citing editorial problems, creative differences, all the usual things.
Well, very famously, Rob Liefeld walked.
Rob Liefeld
and,
walked.
And Gail Simone, and then she came back.
And George Perez walked as well. In fact, George Perez, when we asked to interview him, declined because he said all that he needs to say about DC. Yep. As I said, the media picked this up as it being a band of a gay wedding, but there were a couple of interesting things that they wanted to do. A lot of the changes that they wanted to make editorially were going against plans that Williams and Hayden had made. Williams and Blackman had made over the last 12 months, they say. And it's something we're hearing a lot. The DC just coming in at the last minute and making changes to stories that are already planned out, already mapped out, all ready to go ahead, and then just sort of saying, "No, let's take it in this. Let's have some rewrites. Let's do something else." The marriage thing, DC are now backtracking and saying we're not against gay marriage. And in fact, to be fair, Williams and Blackman have actually also said in their original statement this was not a gay marriage thing. DC don't want marriages happening in the New 52 universe, which is interesting because someone said, "Well, what about Aquaman?"
That's true, he's got a wife.
Well, apparently not. They've actually explicitly said at Baltimore Con this week, no, they're not married. People pulled out panels, were going, she is the queen, she is, you know. It's like, no, apparently she's just the king's consort.
So what do you think DC's problem with what marriage is?
DC wants a status quo where anything could happen. They're not tied to the old universe. It's basically the kind of rationale they're saying that, you know, Clark and Lois haven't got together yet. You know, the Flash family man isn't married. In the Flash has chosen a universe not only where his mother's dead, but we're not married either. You know, all these things have happened. So basically, DC are saying, no, it's not gay marriage we're against. It's marriage, full stop. So that's their version of marriage equality. Now, interesting.
Just take it out altogether. Because I've got to say, about the gay marriage thing, if you think about it, they've got a bit of a track record here, because when Earth 2 started, we had Green Lantern about to get married.
And they
blew up his partner. And then now with Batwoman, they spent a year apparently preparing for this wedding.
It's not a good look for them. I'm like, you know, the book itself was a GLAAD award-winning book. The fact that Kathy Kane was gay was being very highly awarded across the board, because she's a good, strong character, full stop. It does look bad. Regardless of the reasons, this looks bad for DC. But Williams and Blackman's comments, both of which were on their respective websites, and in fact, Williams' website went down for most of this week because of the traffic it was receiving
to
this statement. So I ended up pulling it from Blackman's website. It's an identical statement. But they're basically saying that we felt that the series and characters should always be moving forward to keep changing and evolving in order to live up to our mantra and ensure that each arc took Batwoman in new directions. We carefully planned plot lines and story beats for at least the first 5 arcs well before we ever wrote a single issue. He goes on to say that we were told to ditch plans for Killer Croc's origins, forced to drastically alter the original ending to our current arc, which would have defined Batwoman's heroic future in bold new ways, and most crushingly, prohibited from ever showing Kate and Maggie actually getting married. All these decisions came at the last minute, always after a year or more of planning and plotting on our end. Compare that with some of the statements that George Perez said. When he left Superman, I had to keep rewriting things because another person changed their mind, and that was a lot tougher. Mm-hmm. Paul Jenkins, another person who left, said that they've created a culture of dishonesty that affects too many creators, and the worst part is that they always bully their creators. They tried to bully me, and I told them to go to hell. Rob Liefeld, to be mentioned, reasons are the same as everyone else's that you hear. I lasted a few months longer than I thought possible. Massive indecision, last minute, and I mean last minute changes that alter everything. It sounds as though DC really haven't got their house in order.
Yeah, look, it sounds a little bit like there are too many chiefs putting their hands in there
really
and
does.
Saying, how about we do this, or how about we try this, rather than trusting their creators to actually create.
So they're saying, like, their rationale is that you can't have this marriage because we want...
No marriage.
We
no
want marriage. Anything to be possible.
Apparently.
That's the rationale?
So yeah,
here's something that could
possible.
Be a good story
about to say,
that's
is
possible.
Isn't marriage possible?
No, but not the New 52, it's not. Maybe on that Earth 3, but not on Earth 1, it's
forget, like, the gay element to it or the equality issue. Mm. This is just like... nonsense reasoning.
This is editorial dickery. Yeah,
that's it. There's no real reasoning to like kneecap these writers.
No. I mean, look, we're not talking about... This is J.H. Williams III, who's about to do the new Sandman with Neil Gaiman. You know, this is heavy hitter here, people. You know, and apparently that's still happening. Like, he's walked away from this book, but he's not walked away from
it.
Now, I want to say something else here on this, which is a lot of people have been sending death threats to DC.
Oh, my God.
This has become a really, really big thing because of the very sensitive nature of this issue. People, don't do that.
No, that's
this
silly.
Is stupid. If you're going to send them death threats over anything, make it the Lobo redesign.
Yeah, that's right. Or the Trinity War. Yeah.
Or the fact that you're charging $3.99 for the 3D covers. Despite the fact that you drew the line at $2.99 about 4 years ago.
And making everybody buy 52 zero-year supervillain stories that are not related to Forever Evil in any way.
I think you said, I don't know whether you said this at the start of the show or off air, David, but the fact that there was a big board, and we mentioned I don't think that big board is anywhere to be seen anymore. I think that they're running completely rudderless.
No, I think Jim Lee and Jeff Johns and the other creative managers are burning it and dancing around it naked, basically chanting to the gods above or something. Because I don't know what they're doing.
And the titles that are working are those that are firmly standing outside the current continuity.
Yeah.
The ones that are almost creator-owned to an extent.
Virtually, yeah.
Or the ones that basically just decided to go their own way and not even try and tie into.
Why don't they just fire every writer and just get Scott Lobdell to write everything, and then we'll see what happens, you know? Yeah.
He's the machine writer for
DC.
But if anybody drops out, he just writes five issues for them, yeah.
Let's put a bet now, Richard, that Scott Lobdell will be writing Batwoman.
Well, no, actually, they've got the writer. I think we mentioned it in the news section. They've got, they've lined up Mark Andreeke. Andreeko to take over that title, but look, you know, this is a title that Williams had been, and Greg Rucker, actually, I should point out, also walked from Batwoman a few years ago for very similar reasons. So this is not an isolated incident, and you got to worry about this stuff.
Yeah, I think DC has really got to take a hard, long look at what they're doing at the moment, because they seem to be just making it up as they go along at the moment, and it's not good world building, you know.
No, this news segment has been brought to you by Sugar Smacks.
You bet. Just get Kellogg's Sugar Smacks, brand new.
Not available in stores anywhere. All right, people. On to something a little bit more positive. I think it's time that we had a look at our pick of the week this week, which is far more magnificent than anything else that we're going to talk about.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
A pair of soldiers from opposing sides of a never-ending intergalactic war fall in love and go on the run with their newborn baby. It brings with it a new hope, but also unleashes threats around every corner for the fledgling family. Written by Brian K. Vaughan, with art from Fiona Staples, the series that has been described as Game of Thrones meets Star Wars has been almost universally praised, winning 3 Eisner Awards, a Hugo, and places on just about every top 10 list in the business. This is Saga.
Keep listening to that.
Yeah.
No church.
Not
in the
music
wild.
I was expecting.
No, I just sort of throw in a bit of No Church in the Wild there. Yeah, because, you know, what the hell. As that voice told us at the top there, this is probably the most awarded book of the last year.
I would say so. It's actually one of the most talked about books as well, I think.
Yeah, it's speaking of controversies, it's not been without its controversy. Mm. But when it came out, probably about 16 months ago, because there was a four-month break there between issue 12 and 13. And we should say we're covering issues 1 through 12, which is effectively the first season of this. When it came out, that first issue, it wasn't really pre-hyped that much. Mm. I mean, except for the fact that it was Brian K. Vaughan, his last big long series had been Why the Last Man, you know.
Well, that's what drew me to it. Why the Last Man guy has got a new book. Let's go have a look at
and
it.
And it's creator-owned, so this should be good.
Yeah.
And then it dropped, and then it pretty much just disappeared. That first issue, it's, you know, can go for $50, $60 upwards now. Yeah. more, depending on where you're going, trying to find it. But it has dropped, and it took everyone by surprise. And it just kept selling out because it just kept being good. And the fact of the matter was, it's an overhyped book that was actually not even overhyped. It's a hyped book that
lived up to its hype.
And tends to exceed it on a regular basis.
And it's such an interesting book because it's when you start reading it, you're going, what the hell am I reading? Are we fantasy? Is this science fiction? Is this? It is literally a merging of those two genres together. And it world builds so brilliantly that you just accept the fact that we have people with wings and people with horns and there's a robot prince and there's you just sit there and go, yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah,
and
a robot prince with a television
frame. And a tree that flies.
You know?
A tree that flies. Yeah. An arachnid bounty hunter. You know, you sit there and you just go, okay, whatever, just keep throwing it at me. I'll take it.
Shut up and take my money.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, and the thing with Brian K. Vaughan's, I mean, if you've read Why the Last Man, which we've covered before on the show,
And if you haven't, go now.
Yeah.
We gushed all over Why the Last Man, and we've already said that this is must read.
And so we're gonna do some similar gushing all over this.
I think we may just be, yes.
We've been doing some good books lately.
We have been doing some good books.
But this is like, you'll be familiar with kind of the way he tells a story, which is kind of gives you a little bit of information, slowly expands that world, and then really pushes it out, but isn't afraid to stop and then go back and tell a story about a minor character for a whole issue. And then continue on with the forward
dimension. And just when you're getting comfortable with a narrative structure, as you were saying, not only just a minor character, but he'll start following another character completely.
Yeah.
So for a couple of issues, you'll follow the bounty hunters. And you'll see the story from their perspective. But then you'll just return back to our main stars, and then you'll go follow the prince for a while. And then so it's like there is no direct through line. There is no direct where you stand and go, we're always going to be with these people the whole time. No, this world is bigger than that.
I have
and
no
it never
doubt.
Ever feels like it's, you know, making it up as it goes. It's like, no, it all feels no. so contained.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I was going to say, he feels as though, I'm sure there's a massive overarching structure that he's got in his head, because there's references in the first issue to things that you know are going to pay off down the line. We should say that the narrator is Hazel, the baby, and she's narrating it from the future, effectively.
Yeah, so in effect, we know that she survives.
Yeah.
Because she's our narrator, and she's our.
Although I've got to say, when rereading it, she's a native of that planet that comes back as ghosts.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So yeah. Like,
well,
I mean,
she's still effectively alive to tell the story.
Yeah.
Not alive in body, but she's
she's around somewhere. But yeah, but she actually says, "No, I grew old because of these people." This is. I think you described it just before we went on as Romeo and Juliet in space. Mm. And it is in a lot of ways, because it is a classic star-crossed lovers story. But it's so much more than that.
So much more than that. Yeah.
I think it's a very interesting point, though, when we talk about star-crossed lovers and Romeo and Juliet and romance and so forth. We should address the fact that their entire relationship, the reason why these two opposing races, these two people who are of opposing races, got together was over a romance novel.
Yeah, because, like a really trashy
guy
with a shirt off romance novel.
Exactly, because he was a prisoner, she was a guard, and she was reading him the book.
Yeah.
You know, and you said, because of that book is why they ran off together.
And the timeline was really good. It's like, when I was rereading it, she says, like, you know, he'd been in there a day before she decided to run off with him. And then everyone assumed that she was captured.
Yeah.
And the next footage, they saw that she was pregnant, and they were both wearing wedding rings, and... You know, but the thing is, you slowly find out more. Like, you know, halfway through the series, you know, they're getting away, they're on a rocket ship, suddenly the grandparents turn up, you know, which is an awesome storyline. And the thing is, Vaughan has this amazing ability to pull the rug out from under you.
Yep.
As you said, just as soon as you get comfortable, kill somebody off or...
Well, were you guys surprised when he killed off the arachnid bounty hunter, which I can't remember her name. What was her name?
She's the Stork.
The Stork. Yeah. Mm. Well, he killed her off so early. Mm-hmm. And they set her up.
But
to
it's
be.
Not the last you see her, because there's so...
Well, we're seeing memories and flashbacks. And
because there's obviously a backstory with her and the Will, which is the other bounty hunter.
I love the Will.
The Will's a great example of a minor character that you start off and think, okay, this is the guy that's after our people. We have to hate him. And then within two issues of that, he's rescued this little girl from slavery. he's determined, and he almost thinks, you know, stuff these other guys.
Does at one point give up on it. He basically does at one point say, I can't be bothered.
And it's Marco's ex-girlfriend, right?
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, who talks him into coming back to it. That's right.
Yeah.
And so he's back on the case again, you know? So it's like, you're sitting there going, what the hell? We're just, at one point, he's just floating around in space.
Yeah. Like, so actually, when he first gets the assignment, he says, who else is on it? Because he knows it's committing to the stalk. And he says, stuff, and I'm going to Sextillion, which is like a pleasure planet. You know, I'm going to max out this card they gave me before they remember to cancel it, you know? And so he's this great anti-hero character. And that's the great thing about Vaughn's books, even in Why the Last Man. There were characters like the Israeli soldiers in that. You got to love them as much as you did the heroes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's what makes this book so compelling to read. It's just like, you know, if it was just those two. And I've got to say, though, that Alana and Marco, two such well-rounded characters.
You know? Particularly, I think, Alana. I think Alana is a really interesting character because she's got anger management issues.
Yes. You know? I mean, in the opening things, I mean, the opening scene is of her giving birth.
Yeah.
And there's some great dialogue
in that. The dialogue, yeah.
It's just brilliant. She's just like, you know, just keep putting. She says something like, language people, am I shitting? It feels like I'm shitting. And says, just keep pushing. We're so close. Seriously, you'll never want to have sex with me again if I defecate all over you. Unless you're secretly into that, please don't be into that. You know? And it's just like, and it's just this great back and forth between the two of them. But it's so clear, like the way that they're written, they're so in love with each other.
Mm.
And that's, I mean, it's great to have a book where you don't have to question that. You don't have to question.
And he screws up on several occasions. Yeah. He screws up.
And they both get almost killed in the first couple of issues.
But they come back together again.
You know, yeah. And then when he's almost dead at one point, he's talking about the woman that he's still technically engaged to, his ex-girlfriend that you mentioned, and she's like so angry with him, and she, you know, said, damn, I'm going to kill him when he wakes up. As soon as he wakes up, she's just like hugging him. She's like, thank God you're alive. But who's this woman? He explains it, that's fine. And then they have to band together because the next threat turns up. And that's what I love about it. It's kind of like, you know, no matter what happens to these guys, they're going to band together because something... you know, they're doing it for family. They're doing it for Hazel. Mm. And that's such a great motivation.
And then they are a symbol. And as far as the greater scope of the book is concerned, one of the reasons why they're being hunted down so heavily is because they are a symbol for two people who have been at war for so long.
We should say that this war has been going on so long, no one really remembers
What it's about anymore. Yeah. But it's two races who are at war with each other. And then they've got the robot race on top of that, which is the whole...
They're allies, but they're kind of like they're the aristocracy.
Correct me if I'm wrong. We haven't actually really explained the origin of the robots yet, have we?
No.
We don't know where they come from.
No, I think we just accept it.
We just accept that they're the royal family.
I hope they never explain
it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're just the royal family, and who knows why they're there, but they are the ruling body. Almost like they've orchestrated this war between these two people.
But they've got such human traits. Like Prince Robot the Fourth just wants to have a family, which is something else. I mean, he is this real bad mofo. I mean, he is like, you know, he can really like he can turn his arm into a cannon, you know, and all that sort of stuff. But he wants to have kids, you know, with his wife, and then he finds out he's sitting on a toilet when he finds out his wife's pregnant, and his motivation is that he can't go back home until he's caught these two, in the first arc, he can't go back home until he's caught these two and see his family, so he's got, you kind of almost sympathize with him from the get-go, because even though he's the bad guy, and he's this faceless robotic machine, he is, you know, doing it for the same reasons they're doing it. He's doing it for family.
And most of the book, most of the 12 issues that I've read so far, he's torn because he doesn't want to be out there in space.
No.
And part of his aggression...
Well, he's just come back from a tour.
Exactly. Yeah. And part of his whole motivation for the behavior that he has, where he kills people without thinking about it or doing whatever he does, is because he just wants to go home.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to be out there anymore.
Just get this over and done with, like, so I can get out of here.
Why can't we just finish this?
Yeah.
You know? It's like, and why is it so hard to catch two fugitives with a baby?
That's a running joke all throughout.
Yeah.
Let's mention that. The book is, like, amazingly funny.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Mm. And yeah. But I just want to say, like, Fiona Staples, that's it. That's the end of my comment. It is, like, one of the best drawn, colored books out there.
I was not familiar with Staples at all before this.
This is, like, her first big kind of work, isn't it?
And it's phenomenal.
Holy
work.
Crap.
I mean, yeah. This is, if you're not attracted to the story, be attracted to the art. I mean, she
colors the whole thing herself too.
Yeah,
it's done entirely digital.
Yeah, it's art by Fiona Staples. Yeah. It's not just
Brian K. Vaughan has a history of this, doesn't he? He's got a history of finding really good artists
and female artists, because I think he had
because it was Pia Guerra. Yeah, she was. I mean, the art in Y is fantastic. Yeah.
But it's the same as like Why the Last Man is, like, for years there, whenever I would meet someone who, you know, would give me the reaction of, oh, you read comic books,
read this,
read Why the Last Man, and then they go, holy crap. And then, like, Saga,
I think most people do that.
I've used Saga about 4 or 5 times to bring people into the comic world, and every time, like, I even gave it to my dad, who's never read a comic.
Did you
really
give him that infamous issue?
No, I gave him the two trade paperbacks, and he comes back to me because he's not familiar with comic books that much. He goes, when's the next one?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, Dad, you have to wait about 4 months for the single issue, you know?
Did this to a friend recently, and they'd given them all of Why the Last Man to read, and they said, that was the greatest thing I've ever read.
Mm.
And they said, what else? And I said, if you like that, you probably like Saga. Devour the first 2 trades, and now it has to go through the painful thing of waiting every month. Exactly the same. And I think that this is kind of one of the frustrating things about Saga, is that it's so good that you cannot wait the 30 days for it. And that is the mark of a great book. And people talk about, oh, I have to wait 7 days now until the next episode of this thing comes on. We have to wait 30 days every single time, people.
For what is effectively 25 pages.
Yeah, so we're waiting 30 days for a half-hour TV show.
And
yeah,
you guys know the feeling when you love a comic book. It doesn't feel like 40 minutes. It feels...
And it's
done.
When you love a book, you literally devour it. First read-through, because I generally, if I love a book, it's going to be 2 read-throughs at least straight off the bat. Because the first read-through is over before you've blinked. Yeah. You know, it's like you go, yes, 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 yes.
Oh, okay, my God.
It's over. Oh, my God. It's over. Let's go back and get the details.
Yeah, exactly. And what's great about Saga, though, same with The Walking Dead, is that there's an amazing, like, long letter section at the back.
He does a really good letter section.
And the Brian K. Vaughan letter sections are, like, outstanding.
Yeah, and they're worth the time to read those separately.
The fans send in pictures of their costumes and, like, it's great. Yeah.
I know, it's
sorry, we all just got stuck looking at the artwork.
I started looking at this, the issue that I, when I was rereading up to when when Marco and his mother are on this planet just shortly after they've met, and there's this giant sort of creature with testicles hanging down to the ground. The thing is, the other thing we should say is it's an incredibly violent book. Very sexually explicit.
Yes.
In
fact, so sexually explicit it actually got into some trouble. Now, we should talk about that very quickly.
We'll talk about it.
Issue
12. This is probably... And I put a little article about this up at the time, and it still gets a lot of hits. Mostly because it has sex in the title. but it's there was a couple of controversies around that time. This one is in particular because on the cover and another scene in the thing, Prince Robot has been severely injured, virtually to the point
of death. And he's being triaged by a field doctor.
By a field doctor, and his images flash on his screen as he's dying. And in one of the reprint versions, I don't think that they've actually just put a kind of like a barcoded screen on the cover. So when they reprint it, they check it out. But in the actual issue itself, they've got the scene, which is basically a blowjob with 2 men in it, and which is really, really interesting because it was banned from Comixology.
But as we found out, it wasn't banned by Comixology.
Well, actually, it was a choice that Comixology made. And Dave's got the thing open to this giant monster with his testicles hanging down, which is probably far more explicit than anything in the other issues.
Just some interesting trivia about this from reading the letter section. Someone asked, like, oh, you know, the giant balls on this huge monster. Like, why did you do that? And the Brian K. Vaughan's response is, it's like, well, it's the same issue where Marco meets his mother for the first time. So I wanted a monster that would be the worst possible monster that you would see if you were with your mother. But it's great because the penis is so small, but the balls are, like, monstrous.
When the monster appears, she's like, Mom, you don't want to look at this.
And then the next letter after was like, you know, how much did you describe to Fiona Staples? And he actually puts in the letter section the actual script description, and it's like minute detail he describes this monster. So if you have the single issue, pick it up.
Oh, look, for this particular one, the issue 12, which we're talking about, I'm like, it's a really bloody issue, as it sucks. It's got this sort of mouse-like creature's head exploding a couple of pages later. But the issue, of course, was the gay blowjob on the screen.
Yeah.
The Comixology chose not to submit it to iTunes because the story came out that was that Apple banned the issue because the policy was that they assumed this, and we'd all assumed.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. This was Image, and Image did it with two books in the same month. It was this, and it was also Sex.
I think it was Sex, but Sex wasn't an issue. It got through.
No, issue one.
Issue one didn't get through.
Remember, it was the same month. Both of those books.
Actually, the consequences of this were interesting because even Black Kiss got restored to it because Apple backtracked very, very heavily and said, no, that wasn't our policy at all. You've misinterpreted it. Comixology released a statement saying, we misinterpreted the policy, so we're reinstating this, and it was allowed out there. I think everyone got really embarrassed.
I think everybody just basically were gun-shy and jumped the gun.
And the beautiful thing was because all these other books that had previously not been available on Comixology because of this perceived policy from Apple...
Suddenly there was a flood of them out there.
Black Kiss went up there. A couple of months later, issue 3 or 4 of Sex has an even more graphic blowjob in it. Heterosexual blowjob. Went through without anybody batting an eyelid.
Yeah.
So at the time, I did question whether or not this was because of the homosexuality.
No. I remember being so annoyed about this when the controversy happened. Because in my mind, it was like, it's just some bureaucrats who haven't read a comic book in their life.
And they're going, what's that penis doing there?
Oh, this is a child book, you know, like... That's
Archie
the thing, like,
and Veronica Blush.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, have they ever heard of Garth Ennis? You know?
Yeah. It's a thing. I mean,
Bloody hell.
As soon, it's like
sex in a comic.
It's like the Much Tamer, that Archie and Veronica Blush thing was from the Much Tamer story about the Fox News coverage of the Batman and Catwoman having sex.
Mm.
And that was just, you know, that was nothing. But that was like, oh my God.
But they were in latex.
Yeah, the story was like, Batman and Catwoman having sex on a roof, Archie and Veronica blush. Yeah. You know,
then a couple months later, Archie and Veronica comics have gay marriage and Million Mom Marches. So it's like, I think they kind of missed the point in all of it. But anyway.
But I mean, the thing is, I think Brian K. Vaughan at the time sort of objected by saying it was a postage stamp size thing.
Sorry. Would you stop fondling your iPad?
Medic!
It's just so hot.
It's very hot in the studio. I know what we're doing when the show's over. I think it's time for a quick break.
Just get Kellogg's Sugar Smacks, brand new.
Ooh, can't wait to get some of those into me.
I was just replacing that image with like Captain America. Yeah, Tony Stark. Like, you know.
It looks a little bit like Steve Rogers, doesn't it? Do you think Fiona Staples was being a bit subversive there?
I apologize to the listening audience. I'm so sorry, guys. I have no idea what's going on.
And you never will. The thing is, though, controversy aside, the issue itself was, like all the other issues, bloody great.
It was great. And it was one page, you know?
As Vaughn said, a postage stamp size image on one page of the comic. In a comic that also has people's heads exploding, there's a ghost that flies around most issues with her entrails hanging out. teenage ghost, we should say, with her entrails hanging out. We've had, you know, robots doing it doggy style. We've had...
But that image was the one that pissed them off.
Yeah, so out of all the things that pissed them off. So, but also that issue 12 was significant for another reason, was that it was one of the best written issues because it's one of their goals becomes to visit the writer of that pulp novel that we were talking about.
One of my favourite scenes ever.
We'll wrap it up quickly after we talk about this scene because we've got some feedback as well. But just because the whole thing plays out as a conversation between Prince Robot the Fourth and this writer, and it's such a great, tense, almost sort of Coen Brothers kind of...
I was thinking it's very much like Tarantino, Inglourious Basterds, that conversation around a table, you know? It's that kind of level. It's where you're going, who's going to flinch? Who's going to flinch first?
The only difference is we don't know that there's someone hiding under the floorboards until the last in the cupboard.
And
in
then
this
you
case,
reread the
stairs.
Issue and it's even better.
Yeah. Exactly it. So look, this is one of those books that will surprise you at every turn. Comes up with tense surprises like that a year into it. isn't afraid to go off and tell a completely different story and still have you enthralled 100% every single issue. I cannot recommend this enough. I'm pretty sure I speak for everyone when I say that.
I think it is.
This is comics 101.
Absolutely. This is must-read stuff. If you are new to comic books, this is a good entry point too.
And you can get them all on Comixology. You can get them in two trade paperbacks at the moment. Issue 13 has just hit the stands, but the two trade paperbacks covers issues 1 to 12, so you can catch up very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Do it.
Do it. Do it now.
Now, Dave, it's time for the girl from Ipanema, because we've got some very quick feedback.
And she is here.
Hi, guys. Last week, we put out an appeal for people to hit up the iTunes and leave us some feedback. It'd help raise us in the rankings. And some of you have done that. We want to thank you for that. And we'll read some of those out now. Before I do, though, once again, the best thanks you can give us for producing the show free every week. And it really means the world to us if you leave a bit of feedback on iTunes or leave us a star rating. It's the thing that makes us more popular and more visible. Mm-hmm. And that's really all we want to do with the show. We want to get this word out as much as possible.
We'd also like to point out that we have been number one on Geek Podcasts in the Australian iTunes store.
Yes.
2 weeks running now.
For if you look for the geek-related podcast, the Geek Actually Superfeed.
Yep.
Which will have everything, including some of our new shows we've got coming up soon as well. Now, the Trizunks has left on iTunes. It says that we're the first and best, 5 stars. Behind the Panels and Film Actually were the first podcast I ever listened to. There have been a few others since, but nothing compares to the Geek Actually crew. Always giving their honest opinions and telling it like it is. Highly recommended. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's amazing. The next one's much more simple. Only 4 stars, but it says lively, informed, and on point.
I'll take 4 stars.
I'll take 4. It's better than none. Also, Mr. DM44 says, awesomeness! And there's about 5 exclamation marks and 5 stars. If you have any interest in comic books or comic-related movies, check these guys out. They know this stuff and are very insightful and funny. Thank you. great podcast. Highly, highly recommended. That's amazing feedback, guys.
Absolutely. And remember, you can drop us a review on iTunes at any time like that, and we'll read it out on the show. You can also voicemail us. Our voicemail is Skype ID Geek, actually, and there's also a phone number attached to that. Go to our Contact Us page, and you can find out more about that if you're local. Or you can just drop us feedback at feedback@behindthepanels.net.
Or you can talk to us at any time on Facebook at facebook.com/behindthepanels.
Or follow our Twitter accounts, which we're going to come to in a minute, because I got into a Twitter discussion this week.
And
I think we should bring this up. Mike from Canada, my good friend Mike from Canada, who's been following us for a long time, called me out and basically said that I should stop having a go at Spider Island because it's not like all of the other events. I'm paraphrasing, of course. Basically, not like all the other events. It's not just an ad for another event. So I wrote back to him and basically said that, you know, I disagreed with this. Anyway, I'm going to read you this little part right here, which basically says, Spider Island is a filler event. This is what Mike from Canada said to me on Twitter. He said, Mike, Spider Island is a filler event designed to keep Slott's plan for Superior Spider. Please keep in mind for future issues of Behind the Panels. And I responded to him with basically saying, you kind of made my point for me. Because if you think about it, what he just said was that it's a filler event to get ready for Superior Spider-Man, which basically makes it an ad for Superior Spider-Man, which is meaning that it's just an event advertising. So, you know, he then responded with coming back, and this is not angry at all, by the way. I love Mike from Canada.
Love you,
Mike. He says, but the original intent was not for an ad. It was a creative wedge. Would you have preferred... Here's his point, and we're going to answer this right now. Would you have preferred to go from 682 to 700, have only been 2 issues? Yes.
Yeah. You know, at this point, Dr. Octopus,
you have my permission to die.
Yes. And I got to say, he actually then responded as well by saying, it's called Superior Spider-Man for a reason. Well, not to me.
Yeah, it's marketing.
Yeah, for marketing. It's not to me. I don't think it is a Superior Spider-Man. I've actually stopped reading it. I can't read it anymore. It drives me crazy.
I'm still reading
it. And all
it.
I can say is, bring back Peter Parker. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. It doesn't work for me.
Can we do Spider Island on this show?
we may have to.
I think so. But so what we're doing before we...
Mike, love you. Keep writing to me.
Oh, so what we're doing next week, though, we're doing R.I.P.D.
Oh, yes.
We'll be seeing the movie at some stage during the week. And
we should make stress, though, that the episode of the show will be the comic. We're going to kind of throw in a bit of the movie, but we are really reviewing the comic.
So we're going to talk about the movie a little bit, yeah. But the comic, which was sort of hard to find, but for us, but we did manage to track a copy down here in Australia, and we'll be doing the first four issue miniseries.
Yeah.
So that's what we'll be tackling next week. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at DVDBits, on BehindThePanels.net, TheRealBits.com, and of course Behind the Panels Facebook page. Dave, yeah, where can
you
find
me on Twitter at Dave Longo and DamnGoodCup.com.
And if you want to yell at me like Mike Wheeler does,
you can find me
on Twitter at David McVeigh, or you can find me, of course, on GeekActually.com or on BehindThePanels.net. Now, very interestingly enough, our Smash footage is going up.
Yes.
Finally. Sorry it's a little bit late. By the time you listen to this show, it will be up, so have a look for
lots of cosplayers, lots of interviews, lots of me and David just talking to people.
Talking to the cosplayers, which is a lot of fun. And Susan Ma.
And look out for that. So, until next week, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
Dave Longo.
And this is Behind the Panels.